Do you ever have couples or advise couples who, you know, the parents of each partner perhaps are just really uncomfortable with this kind of mixed religion to the ceremony? Do you have any experience counseling people on things like that?
Yes, I do. I work with the parents as well as the couple.
Can you give us some insight, scenarios, advice for someone listening that might be, you know, going through that?
Certainly. You want to be honest with everyone involved. The goal is two traditions, and you're not belittling either one, and you're not weighing it in favor of the one or the other. It's one ceremony, two traditions coming together.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, land that wedding.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Hello. As I am speaking right now, I'm in my childhood bedroom because I happen to be in Texas. And I can smell, Michelle, through the door all the way upstairs that my mom is making like grilled cheese sandwiches for the boys right now. It's that like undeniable
smell. Nostalgic.
Well, just like to be here in this room and smelling that is definitely like a wave of bringing me back. I mean,
did you wear braces? Did you have braces when you were a kid?
I did. I had all the things.
Did you make out with anybody in your bedroom, in that bedroom?
I mean, I definitely did, but it wasn't, I don't think it was the number one spot in the house. There's a game room that had a, we weren't supposed to ever be in my bedroom. So if I was in here, it was sneaky. Yeah. Well, and that's a whole nother episode.
That is a whole nother episode. I kind of want to just talk about that. No, we can't. We can't. Because this episode is really good. We've talked a little bit about religion, but we don't want to single out any religion, nor do we want to promote any other religion, nor are you or I religious.
And the podcast is based on like a foundation of inclusivity. So if we do talk about any religion, it's always like backed up with like, if you want to do that, or in this case, or, you know, we qualify things so that everybody listening, we can feel like is going to get something out of it, religious or not.
Right. And I think this is just the perfect guest for us and for our listeners, because Rabbi Block, clearly he's a rabbi.
That would be Jewish.
Which means... That would be Jewish. Yep. But his whole thing is you can have any kind of ceremony you want.
Yes.
Any religion, mix of religions.
No
mentioning
religion.
God. No mentioning God. Whatever you want to do, we're going to do it.
Whatever you want to do, you can do it. And also he is... put himself in a role to facilitate that. So he's like an officiant for hire, which we go into. But he also schooled us a little bit. Not that's like he scolded us, but he taught us something.
Yes.
Multiple things in the hour and a half that we talked to him. And one thing that we kept circling back to is this idea of being religious versus being observant. And we'll let him describe that because it would be in better terms than we could anyway. But it was kind of eye-opening and refreshing, and also affirmed, even in the moment, our choice to have him on and to talk about, you know, Jewish ceremonies, but also all ceremonies, because obviously he's a man of religion, but I think neither one of us, you know, knew going into the recording exactly like how nitty-gritty is this going to go, and do we want to like have to talk to our editor and be like, oh, just, you know, that right. one part where he goes on and on about some religious aspect, but that didn't happen at all. We were no. delighted and impressed.
He studied every religion. I feel like he knows, he knows all the prayers. He knows different languages. He knows the different books. I mean, he really
does hundreds and hundreds of ceremonies. And he told me
over 500.
Yeah. And I think he mentions it in the episode about how he works with couples. He doesn't just give them a couple templates of like, okay, look at these. This is similar to you, you know, your dynamic. So pick the words that you want. He gives them access to every single script he's ever done. And I mean, he must have them organized or cataloged in a certain way, but it's like, here's all the scripts of ceremonies I've done. You choose what you like from any of these, and we will put it together and we will get you two married the way you want to be married.
I love it. And I loved him. And as you'll hear, there is one type of ceremony he has yet to do, and he does want to do it. So listen in for that, because it's quite surprising.
And maybe that's you listening.
It might be you listening.
It might be you.
Right now.
I want to read his bio, because he did. Oh, this yeah. was read the only bio. Part of the outline when I sent it to him that he sent back and was like, could you just tweak this little part right here? So it's
yeah.
rabbi approved. Okay. Rabbi Kenneth Block began his rabbinical career in 1974 as the rabbi of the Jewish Center in Havre de Grace, Maryland. I might be pronouncing that wrong.
In that sounds really good.
1978, Rabbi Block was honored with the Boston College Alumni Association Award of Excellence for Religion. He retired after 40 years as an addiction chaplain at the Veterans Administration Maryland Healthcare Systems and as the chaplain for Bel Air, Maryland Volunteer Fire Company.
See, this is things we didn't even talk about, but that's okay. It's another episode.
He has a military background as well, I think, with that's what a chaplain is, right? Aside from innumerable weddings and other religious and secular ceremonies Rabbi Block has performed in association with specific organizations, he has written and performed well over 500 ceremonies outside of those affiliations.
You see?
Impressive.
Really impressive. He knows his stuff. All right. Well, you listen in and take some notes. Actually, just take inspiration, because you can do any type of ceremony you want, no matter who's telling you what. If someone in your house of worship or that you grew up with seeing in your house of worship is telling you, no, absolutely not, you can't do that, Rabbi Block is going to prove him wrong.
Boom.
So here we go.
Hello, my name is Rabbi Kenneth B. Block, and I'm here in Silver Spring, Maryland, just outside of D.C., and thank you for having me on your podcast.
Well, thank you for being here, Rabbi Block. We were very excited to do an episode talking very much about Jewish ceremonies and tradition and hybrid, dual faith. Because we mostly speak of, you know, civil ceremonies, I would say, Christy, right? When we do speak of them.
Yes. We try not to just default to straight, like, I guess a Protestant Catholic or Catholic, just traditional wedding in a church. But so many of our listeners and so many of our own clients have a very, strong desire to not have religion in their ceremonies. So when we do get questions about religious ceremonies, we always want to dig a little bit more. And for probably 2 years now, we've said we need to do a wedding that is, or an episode that is telling us more about Jewish weddings, especially as we're seeing more and more people.
And you just gave me a prompt. You said religious, and people say that often. I'm not religious. Or, well, if you weren't religious, you wouldn't be talking to me. So it's important to separate being religious from being observant. I haven't met many people who aren't religious. Everybody's religious. Many people aren't observant in a faith. And often we equate being observant with being religious. And one can be very observant and not a good religious person, violating all the laws and rules. And one can be very religious and never step foot in a building. So religion is about relationships with God, with the one, with another person. And so you do talk about religious weddings, even though they're not denominational or they're not about ritual or observance. Mm-hmm. I make that distinction with everyone I talk to.
Yeah, or they specifically want to leave the word God out, even though they have other ways of expressing like a connection to a larger perspective.
Right. Yeah, and that's not at all unusual. I do ceremonies with little or no mention of God. However, all of it involves relationship with higher power, with the one, with the universe. And that's what religion is about, having a relationship.
Just to tell all of our listeners off the bat that you work specifically, or we're talking to you because you have officiated so many weddings. So you are an officiant for hire, in the way that it's not like you're connected to one synagogue and only if you attend that synagogue do you get to be married by Rabbi Block.
Correct. A rabbi for hire. My website's rabbionthego.com. And originally we were going to call it Rabbi to Go. But if you look at those letters, the word rabbit stands out. And that originally
Rabbi Ogo.
Rabbi Ogo. Right. And we looked at that on the screen and said, we need to call it something else. So we changed it. And we were going to do Rabbi on the Run, but that's too much like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So we didn't do Rabbi on the Run.
So Rabbi on the Go. I love that.
Rabbi on the Go. So who calls you? Who reaches out to you to officiate their wedding?
When I started, I don't know how many years ago, people found me on the internet, and I was never anyone's first choice. They had already gone to their rabbi, their minister, their pastor, and I was down on the list. As the years went on, people went to a wedding, or they had a friend that went to a wedding I did, and consequently, I was the first or second call. Then the other group I work with are unaffiliated. Doesn't matter whether they're Christians or Jews, they're just not affiliated with a religious institution. And a lot of clergy will only work with members, or you have to join for them to do the ceremony. So those are the two distinct groups, unaffiliated, and those that couldn't find anyone that would work with them because of the circumstances.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Were you down on the list because they'd already been like kind of rejected by other people that they had asked?
Not kind of. They were rejected and sometimes lectured to and sometimes berated. And I think that's a very sad state for religion and for my colleagues. You know, if you don't want to do the wedding, just say, I'm sorry, I do not officiate, I'm not going to do it. But somehow my colleagues feel the need to go into something else. And I have a lot of stories that I choose not to remember because it's too embarrassing about what my Jewish and Christian colleagues say to people.
It's on your website, I guess, kind of could be your catchphrase or your tagline. No couple should be denied the right to be joined together. So that positioned you sort of in a unique way.
And my goal was to demonstrate that any two individuals can have a meaningful wedding ceremony. And I've finished my goal. The only people I haven't co-officiated, are those who won't co-officiate with me. And that's because of their theology or because of their rules. I understand. And then the other is there are still some religions I haven't done only because people haven't come to me. I've done Church of the Brethren, a Mennonite. I've never done Amish. Now, I don't know if a Jew would marry someone who's Amish or two Amish people would want to hire me. So it's a different, but you name a religion, a denomination. There is, however, one I have not done that is on my list that I really want to do.
Which is?
And nude. I have not done a nude wedding.
Not expecting you to say that.
Yeah, me neither.
And my wife said, if I get a nude wedding, she won't come.
Because Michelle, he told me on our onboarding call that his wife is often his date for, you know, these events. Not that they tie one on and stay till the very end, but you know, it's a nice excuse to like get out of town, go somewhere. He works. Maybe you get a little bit of food and drink out of it, but it's a nice date.
That's awesome.
Night.
That's great.
Yeah, when we were in Glasgow and we spent several weeks in Scotland, we still talk about the wedding we did in Scotland. When we were up in Canada at McGill at the university, we still talk about going to Canada. We have made several trips to Colorado and we plan time. Mm-hmm. And we do the wedding and then we have the vacation of the time there. But even locally, going into DC, most beautiful venues and meet great people. At one wedding, we were seated next to, he was the director of surgery, George Washington. I don't remember which medical center, but two of the guests that we happened to stay for dinner that time, but two of the guests at the table didn't win a Nobel Prize, but they were on, you know, somehow on the, I would never meet someone like that in my lifetime. And so one wedding, Harriet sat next to the Japanese ambassador to the United States.
Wow.
It was at the Hay Adams Hotel up on the roof. And again, we would never meet these people. You'd never get to talk or say hello or just find out that they're people. And they were at a wedding and they knew the couple. And this couple, she was a reporter for Taiwan News. That's why the ambassador happened to come to that, because of her connections, not connections, because of her job. But these, we meet great people, get to talk to different people of religions and professions that would never come in contact with.
That's awesome. And, you know, we do have a lot of listeners, like millions. So maybe there's somebody planning like a nude mountaintop wedding with like a yoga retreat kind of vibe reception, and they're gonna hear about you.
No, I'm much more thinking of a beach in California. I don't want to be naked on a mountaintop, Chrissy. Okay, what are you thinking?
Come on. Well, I'm in California, Rabbi Block. So if I hear of anybody, I'll let you know.
Now, did
taller
a wedding
the mountain, the closer to God.
Did a wedding in Costa Rica at Manuel Antonio National Park. And it was on the beach, and we set up the chuppah, and there were a couple of families. The bride's family was from, I don't remember where in South America, and he was from Baltimore. So they picked Costa Rica because then both families could come. And we set the chuppah up, and people on the beach just sort of stayed back and gathered. There was a little hill, and they sat there. And all of a sudden, I heard screaming, yelling. I heard something. Well, by the time I turned my head, the other people on the beach had quieted that person. I don't know if he intended disrupt. I don't know what he intended, but mm-hmm. as soon as, and I had nothing to turn my head, the people, and when the ceremony was over, we broke the glass, a cheer went up on the beach. And it was such an emotional, such a spiritual experience that here were all these strangers, and they were people, Costa Ricans, they were people mm-hmm. on the beach, that they enjoyed listening to the service in Spanish and English. And it just elevates one's feeling about spirituality that permeates all human beings. Doesn't matter what the ritual is, doesn't matter. So we did the seven blessings in Hebrew, Spanish, and English.
Wow, that's cool.
But the people there felt, they could feel. And that's why I said spirituality is different from being observant, why mm-hmm. being religious is about that feeling. Just like at the university in Glasgow, where I was the only one not allowed to wear a kilt, and I still resent it because they asked me to wear my white robes. I was fully vested. All the men were wearing kilts. And so that goes along with my disappointment about nude weddings, because mm-hmm. I've always wanted to wear a kilt. I was in Scotland.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me wear a kilt. So this is one of the hardships of what I do, Kristen.
Yes, I appreciate the idea that a wedding can create and does and should create a sacred space wherever you celebrate it and however you celebrate it, because it is such a big commitment that two people are choosing to make. And for whatever reason, they chose to make it in that place at that time, you know, maybe rather than just doing some paperwork at City Hall and turning it in and moving on. So we're all about telling people to like, do what you want to do. But a wedding is an elevated event in your life. It is a, you know, it is special. That's why we do it. We're wedding planners. And you are a rabbi, which is why I wanted to start, or at least like get into really quickly, because people would call you to hire you. And I assumed before we talked, and I was incorrect, that the majority of the weddings that you officiated were between two Jewish people. And I realized when you told me that that was not the case, there's many, many dual faith or hybrid, I threw that word out, but also non-denominational, or you're working with other clergymen from other religions or churches or faiths. But because we have rabbi in the title of this episode, I would love it if you would just walk us through some of the basic tenets of a Jewish ceremony.
Every wedding has an introduction and conclusion, like bookends or like parentheses. What makes a wedding Catholic, Jewish, Episcopalian is the choice of liturgy that one would put in that would belong to that specific denomination. But every wedding, you have a welcome. So I've done weddings in Catholic churches, Lutheran churches, and Methodist churches.
In these churches, Rabbi?
Oh, yeah, and we had chuppahs. I have photographs of the chuppah in the church in front of the altar. One of the most moving experiences was here in D.C. at, I'm going to have a moment before I remember the name of the church. It's where Kennedy's body was in state after he was assassinated.
Oh, wow.
And there's a raise, we're on a very low, it's raised. We're standing, and when you look down, there was a plaque in the floor that said President Kennedy's body, and it gave the date and the time. It was in state, and we were standing under the chuppah at that moment, and it given a spiritual experience of being in a holy place, being a church, also being where we honored a past president, and we had a chuppah. And the chuppah represents the tent in the wilderness. I mean, think about it. You're the Hebrew people wandering in the wilderness. What's your first wedding gift? A tent to protect you, to provide shade. So the chuppah represents God's presence over you. So here I'm standing next to the priest, and we're both vested. And one of us does the welcome. And this particular service, I began with one line from the Hebrew Psalms. That's part of the traditional wedding. And then Father did the English. I did the next line of the Psalm. He did the English. And then he said, we're gathered. Father, Rabbi Block and I are gathered here today in the sight of God. And he did a little introduction. And then he gives the classic, who presents the bride. Mm-hmm. So the bride comes up. And then I read three lines from a psalm. He does the English for those three lines. And then we do the sign of peace.
What's the sign of peace?
May the peace of God be with you. And the people respond, and with you too. And we all shake hands. Uh-huh. And Father and I say that together. And then we both walk over to the wedding party and give the sign of peace, shake hands with everyone, mm-hmm. and welcome everyone into the... And then we did a responsorial psalm, which is part of the tradition. And there was reading from New Testament.
Part of both traditions?
No, that's no. part of the wedding, Catholic. The Catholic wedding ceremony.
Yeah, we talk a lot.
Okay,
so we did the responsorial, and then we have the reading from New Testament. And of course, then their choir sang Hallelujah. The Celtic Hallelujah. And then Father read from the Gospel. Then I did the blessing over the wine. And I did the Hebrew. He did the English. So there's the two of us throughout the entire ceremony. Now, the next part varies a little. Sometimes I do the vows with the one person, and Father does the vows with the other. Sometimes Father does the vows with both. Sometimes I've done ceremonies where my co-officiant did not feel comfortable doing the vows. So I do the vows. Okay. I defer to my co-officiant with both the vows and the ring exchange, what they're comfortable with and what their ritual will have them do. Okay. So, but we're doing this together. And then again, it's the same with the ring ceremony. And I hold the rings in my hand and Father makes the sign of the cross and blesses, oh Lord, bless these rings that they who wear them may live in your peace and continue in your favor all the days of your life. Okay. Now I do the seven blessings.
Okay. So that's a Jewish thing.
I do Hebrew. He does English. We alternate.
Got it. I think that's beautiful. And I have a couple questions about this specifically because I've done Jewish weddings too. And I was married in a Catholic church. We did it for the grandparents, yada, yada, yada. When you did this Jewish and Catholic ceremony specifically, and by the way, I think this is lovely. And I'm sure a lot of people listening are going to be a little surprised. Like, oh, you could do that? Because I'm going to assume, and I hate using the word assume, but that it might, well, actually, I'll ask you this. Was this ceremony, was it sanctioned by the Catholic Church? Do you know?
Of course. And one of the neat things about number of weddings I also didn't include the statement of intent. Remember, Michelle, the three questions. Have you forsaken all others? Are you here of your own free will? And for the last question, we always modify it. If you are blessed with children, will you raise them with a belief in God? Because you're dealing with a couple of two religions. Mm-hmm. Instead of asking them to raise the children
Catholic or Jewish. Yeah.
In Christ Jesus.
Oh, remember, gotcha.
That's the formula. Remember the three questions. The third question is, if you're blessed with children, will you raise them with a belief in Christ Jesus? So we say, will you raise them with a belief in God?
Hmm. This is the father that you've worked with
many times? This was not. This was the father at the church.
Okay.
St. Matthew's. It's St. Matthew's Church in D.C. And it was the priest assigned that day.
And we worked together. The couple, who was Catholic and who was Jewish of the couple?
I knew you were going to ask me.
And you can't remember.
Correct. And then there is the official record of the church. And every time I have done a church wedding, I have been asked to sign as the co-officiant, Rabbi Kenneth B. Block. And remember, the Catholic Church does have the rights for a baptized and a non-baptized person. And so this is perfectly within the bound. And being a graduate of a Jesuit college, I am honored and thrilled to be able to sign my name to the official ledger, especially now that we have a Jesuit Pope. And so now when I do a Catholic Jewish wedding to the greater glory of God, I see that I am promoting what Pope Francis sees and wants from all of us. And then we do the seven blessings and we have the nuptial blessing, which there are several variations and Father and I alternate the lines.
Explain what is the nuptial blessing.
Within the Catholic Church, there is an official nuptial blessing. There is the classic version, which is very arcane, and I've only used it once. And here, may the love you have found grow in meaning and strength. And then I say, may the glow of your love brighten the face of the earth. And we continue with an antiphonal reading. And all our weddings are scripted. There's no surprises. I do so many different kinds and with so many different clergy. I want the couple to feel comfortable that this is what will happen and no one's going off script. No one's going on a tangent. And if we have no Hebrew, I'm not going to sneak any in. And if there's no mention of Jesus, it's not going to get snuck in. And I work with my co-officiant and we all agree. This is what we're doing. And this is the language we're using. And it's always a pleasure. And it does renew my faith in God and in religion when I can work with clergy, Lutheran, Methodist, Roman Catholic. And we sit and work together and we add and delete. And we go, oh, I've had priests say to me, oh, we have to move this. So we're not going to say that. And we'll change it because it's the couple. And it's about the couple. It's not about me. And it's not about a denomination.
Right.
And it's not about a rubric or a formula.
So you're writing it together in essence to serve the needs of the couple and what they've specified. So you talk to them at length as well, or they've seen your examples and kind of pick and choose what they like.
Right. They've seen examples. They pick and choose. I give them resources to work with. In the end, I'm not a policeman. You know, Judaism has been around for a very long time. And Roman Catholicism has been around for almost as long. And officiating at this kind of a wedding actually enhances both religions, because people are now going to go to church. Do you really think someone is going to go to a church or a synagogue or a temple if their clergy said, "I won't do your wedding"? They're not going to go. You just drove them away.
Yeah.
So this brings them in. And one of the things I like to say, Michelle, is John Paul II, he referred to the Jews as our older brothers in the faith. And so when we do the priestly benediction, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord shine upon you. Okay, I do the Hebrew. My co-officiant does the English. But before we begin, if it's Jewish, Roman, Catholic, I will introduce it by saying, Moses, the teacher, stood with his brother Aaron the priest, and God said to the rabbi and the priest, "This is how you shall bless the people for all eternity." And it's an honor and a privilege for Father Kelly and myself to give the blessing that God ordained. Father Kelly, as my younger brother in the faith, I will start by doing the Hebrew, and he will respond with the English. And it's the truth.
It works. It seems like there's a lot of parts of the ceremonies that correlate with each other anyways. And then not that it's like an easy task to mesh them together, because you are going to work with what the couple wants, but there's certainly many similarities. My one question was, in a ceremony like that, or the specific one you're talking about, do you smash the glass? And at what point do you kind of take over at that point, or how does that get incorporated?
Same thing.
No. Jewish couples want?
No, everything is, if it's two officiants, it's two officiants, one ceremony. It's not a tennis match, and it's not sitting down and getting up, a duet. Mm-hmm. And as I started describing that ceremony, and we will break up the description of the breaking of the glass. And it can also be very short, so there's nothing to break up. But the goal is always one ceremony, two traditions, regardless of what the two traditions are.
Do you ever have couples or advise couples who, maybe it's not Jewish and Catholic, it's some other religion, and, you know, the parents of each partner perhaps are just really uncomfortable with this kind of mixed religion to the ceremony? Do you have any experience counseling people on things like that?
Yes, I do. I work with the parents as well as the couple.
Can you give us some insight, scenarios, advice for someone listening that might be, you know, going through that?
Certainly. You want to be honest with everyone involved. And you don't want to, I don't want to use the word lie because that's not fair, but you don't want to pretend it's something other than it is. But you also want to talk about the similarities and that you're doing a spiritual ceremony. The starting point is we're not doing a Catholic wedding. Okay? We're not doing a Jewish wedding. And there's nothing wrong with that, because by definition, you have a Catholic wedding when both people are Catholic. You have a Jewish wedding when both people are Jewish. And so now we've started by saying we want to take two traditions and create a meaningful ceremony. And that's what you want to work with the parents. And you have to have the parents buy into or understand. And I had some parents who didn't. I had one where the father of the bride didn't show up.
Oh, and that's a shame.
Michelle, it's more than a shame. It's a shanda. It's a disgrace, because here you are disowning your child. You're saying you don't love them because they didn't say a word or say something that you think it's just not. Well, but that happens. But when you want to work with families, the goal is two traditions. And you're not belittling either one, and you're not weighing it in favor of the one or the other. It's two ceremonies, one ceremony, two traditions coming together. And that's what you want to work with family and well as with the couple. Most of the time, the couples are fine because that's why they're coming to me. And as you mentioned, Michelle, often it's the parents who have a certain vision. And this isn't true just about marriage. Parents often have a vision. Look at how many parents are thrown out of Little League games because they're screaming and yelling at the umpire and they don't respect their own children. They're not there for their children. They think their children's are proxies for them or surrogates for them. And people talking about occupations of their children. They're not sharing anything. The children become a proxy. And that happens, Michelle, with the weddings. And so if yes, you realize that when you're going into it, you work with the couples and people are amazed at the similarities. Take what's called the Lord's Prayer. Okay. The reason as Jews, people cringe at it is because Lord doesn't refer to God, but refers to Christ Jesus. And so for many Jews, we can't include that. Well, I have news for my Jewish listeners. Take a look at the Kaddish Derabbanan. There are five prayers that are labeled Kaddish. In Judaism, when we think of Kaddish, we think of the orphans or mourners Kaddish. There are four others. One of them is a tribute to the rabbis. And if you look at that and look at the Lord's Prayer, you'll see a similarity, not an accident. How was Jesus raised? Jesus was born a Jew and died a Jew. He studied the Talmud. He studied the Mishnah. And so if someone came to him and said, Master, how shall we, like someone comes to me and says, Rabbi, how shall we pray? I'm going to use something out of my tradition. I'm not going to pray in Sanskrit. I'm not going to pray in Hindi. That's not the tradition. So when the disciples said, how shall we pray? What came to his mind was the reference that'll later, at the Kaddish Derabbanan didn't exist then, but it'll evolve into it. So there's nothing in it. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. How can you be offended by that?
Right.
It's familiar even to people who would consider themselves an atheist. It's familiar.
We all know it.
It's already been translated a million times. So right. To be translated in order for that couple to embrace it, I think is a cool thing to be able to share. And speaking of translated, when we talked on the phone prior to this, we were talking about how you work with couples of different backgrounds, different cultures, sometimes different languages, this couple in Costa Rica. But you talked to me about the difference between somebody just interpreting word for word, standing up there, half the people don't speak English, so I'm going to say this in Spanish, and somebody that's actually taking the words and making their own version to make sense rather than a direct word for word, sure. And what that difference is. And I thought that was really interesting because people might be dealing with that aspect too, in addition to religious stuff.
Yes, thanks, Christy. You know, just to interject, anything can be done. The problem is in our own minds, we create barriers and impediments and we say, well, it can't be done or you shouldn't do that. Of course you can do it. So Sebastian, I knew the family from, they were local. And we all flew down to Costa Rica. Her brother's Canadian, Sebastian, and he's bilingual. So we had sent Sebastian the wedding ceremony. He translated into Spanish, sent it back to me. And then I went over it with the bride. Then when we got to Costa Rica, Sebastian and I sat down with the ceremony. And he stood just next to my shoulder, not next to me like a co-officiant, but close enough that everyone realized, and we had practiced. I would do Hebrew, English, or English, whatever I was doing. We had practiced where to put the pauses in, and we had gone over the Spanish together. And he would say to me, this is a more formal, and I'd say, what's less formal? Or I want you to be more formal with the Spanish here. And we worked up, and we spent the 2 days, not the whole time, but we spent time before to perfect it. And we were moving, and you wouldn't even know that it was being translated. He was so good, so smooth, that it just happened.
Wow.
Another wedding I did, they were Persian, Iranian, and the ketubah was in Farsi, Hebrew, and English. I don't do it.
Whoa, that's so
cool. And we had somebody read the Farsi, and I read the English and the Hebrew. Anything is possible. It's a matter of creating it.
Would you say the majority of your weddings are interfaith, or are you doing a lot of just straight Jewish weddings?
The only Jewish weddings I do are someone who's unaffiliated. And they're not interested in joining a congregation because they already asked their congregational rabbi, and he or she would only do it if they joined. They're not interested. But that's just my point. They want to have a Jewish wedding. So why are we sending them away? And I've had couples come and say to me, oh, my rabbi won't do the wedding, but he said after we're married, we can join. This was an interfaith couple.
Rabbi, because I'm looking, Christy and I recently, well, we've been working on it a whole year, but we created a digital course. And in this digital course, we're teaching couples who otherwise couldn't afford a wedding planner how to plan their wedding. So there's like these videos, there's tutorials, there's all these templates, you know, with our spreadsheets and our checklists, and we're teaching them all of our years of experience. And we have one lesson that's what we call the ceremony layout. And it's not the scripting of the ceremony, but it's, you know, like a floor plan layout almost, right? Including the processional and how people stand and all that. And so I'm looking at our Jewish American, you know, like little template to kind of help people out. And I'm thinking, man, I should have Rabbi Block look at this. Because, you know, for us, like the biggest difference, there's many, but like the bride and the groom are switched sides.
That's exactly right.
Right. But I've seen when under the chuppah, it's freestanding. I've seen a chuppah where the parents are holding the, the poles. I've seen a chuppah where like everybody's under it, or, you know, just the rabbi and the bride and groom are under it. What is the quote traditional?
There isn't any. The chuppah is a concept, an idea. It represents the tent in the wilderness with God's presence over you. And so when I talk to couples, I'll say, would you like people to hold the poles? Not really. You don't really hold them. You support them.
Right.
Like in the military, you put the end under your and the instep of your shoe. So you're supporting it. You're not holding it above your head. And I point out to couples that means there are four people. They may be your parents, they may not. So your parents may be under the chuppah with us. You've chosen four of your best friends. So that's 8, 12, that's 15 of us. And understand that that makes for a very informal ceremony. Because there are so many people close to you, I find we'll talk to each other, we'll smile. And if you're looking for something more formal, you want the chuppah to be in a stand, and you don't want anyone under the chuppah with you. Mm. Because think about it. If there's 4, 8, 10, 12 people, then of course you're going to have cross conversation, and you're going to smile, and you're going to... At one wedding, we shared the wine instead of just the bride and the groom drinking it. The parents... We poured wine for everybody. And it creates, that goes back to your initial question, Michelle. How do you envision your wedding? Do you want something very formal? Do you want something informal? Do you want to include participants? And each one sets a different tone. So we want to create what you want, not what I want. Mm. And then you brought up the standing. A number of weddings, even two people who are Jewish, we follow the Christian standing because that's what most people are used to seeing. And it's only because...
But they used to kneel, right? They used to kneel.
Yeah, but one time. But right now we have the bride stands on the groom's right at the Jewish wedding. Mm-hmm. At a Christian wedding, the bride stands on the groom's left. And that's the only thing, unless you do a halftime switch like you do at a football game, that's the only time that can't be changed or modified.
Why that is. I mean, where did that come from?
There's one of the many theories is that you use your sword with your right hand. And there was so much anti-Semitism in the Middle Ages. There were so many charges against what Jews did. And to show that we wouldn't be taking weapons or do anything, we made our right hand unavailable. Remember that weddings were military engagements. Remember, weddings were two families coming together to sign a peace treaty. And the kings and queens had separate apartments. And that's why you have groomsmen and bridesmaids. And when you look at the processional, look at where people stand. What if a rival family wants to interrupt the wedding? The bridesmaids take the bride and back up and retreat off to the left while the groomsmen form a skirmish line in front of the bride and groom to allow them to retreat before the other family can destroy the wedding. Oh, yeah.
Oh, so it's like a line of defense. That was the line of defense. The wedding party.
The wedding party.
And if you look at
weddings in Scotland and England and France and Italy, you find that they were rival families. And the treaty was you'd marry your daughter to the other king, or the other king's son would marry the princess. You know, think about the history of weddings. And there's always someone out there that didn't want it to happen. And look at the way people sat. You sat the bride's family on one side and the groom on the other.
And that was simply just like line of defense. That was like,
yes, because it was. Yes.
Wow. Look at that. Isn't that interesting?
So one of the history was with families and with people being armed and what could happen since you fought with your right hand. This would show that there was nothing, we can't use it.
You didn't have the intention of fighting that day. You were going to be peaceful day.
Right.
It was so
put
her on your right side
show
that you're not going to grab your sword.
Right. And create a system. But think of the history of marriages historically. And it was to bind families together, to bind kingdoms together, to bind businesses together. And often the couples didn't want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all kinds of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So when you look back.
Well, that was the veil, right? The veil and the seven blessings, or walking around. What is the Jewish tradition where the.
Oh, I love
circling,
this. The women are chattel or property.
They were.
And you acquire a wife, okay?
Yes.
And the woman, to show she was subservient to her husband, she would walk around him seven times to show that she was subservient. One of my colleagues, I have no idea when he started this. It was brilliant. He said, we like the tradition of circling. We don't like subservience. Men and women are equal.
Yes.
So the bride goes around the groom three times. The groom goes around the bride three times. And as a couple, they circumambulate the chuppah.
Oh,
they walk
I
around
love
the
that.
Chuppah.
There's a and good in, tip.
And in that way, they're equal and they're joining the wedding as partners.
I love
it
that.
Kind of gives
Rabbi.
Credence to the marriage being a third part of the triangle, also like individual thing we're doing together to walk around the whole chuppah, which I like to frame ceremonies that way for couples too, when it's like, it is about you two, but there's going to be this other entity, which is the marriage, that is different than. Because a lot of times we work with couples that have been together for a long time already. So the question is like, what's the big difference? We've already lived together for 10 years. We already this or that. And it's like, well, there is a difference, because you're choosing you're choosing to get married and sign whatever and have this ceremony and proclaim it in front of your loved ones. So I do think there's a difference. It's good to recognize that.
Let me give you something that'll be really, really helpful in what you're doing. And that is the mystic concept, the mystic idea that each of us has a sphere of energy that surrounds us. Okay. When you stand alone, you're surrounded, you're circled, like inside of a bubble, but it's our personal, it's personal space. It's another, but the mystic saw this as real energy. You're standing next to someone who's going to be your partner. They have a sphere of energy. I want our spheres to come together to form one sphere around us. By each of us circling the other, our spheres of energy will melt, will merge, will become one. So by the time we each do three, when we walk around the chuppah, it's one energy, not two. We have now become partners. The mystics taught our energy have become partners, and our souls have now become reunited and are now what we call soulmates. And that's another form of what you're saying to couples.
I love that.
Do you have, thinking that we, there somewhere somebody's listening to this who is like, we've already decided as a couple, we're going to have a wedding with my religious background and his, whether they're observant or not. We're going to have these two. We want one ceremony, just like Rabbi Block said. So now what? Like, if neither one of them attends, you know, regular church or a synagogue or anything, but they know they want to incorporate and they're going to need two officiants to help them do this. What are your best practices? Like, how do they start looking? And then once they found the people that are going to do it, how do they help to write the script and combine these two?
That's really a neat question, but it's kind of odd or awkward because, remember, people have come to me. I can't speak for other people out there. I'm sure David Gruber, Rabbi Gruber in Dallas, does what I do. And there are other rabbis around the country. Mm-hmm. And so you want to go online and find someone who's open and willing to work with you and doesn't have any rules or regulations or doesn't want to veto anything. Then you need to find the clergy of the other denomination that is open and willing to work with you to create. And I have my personal files. I have online storage. And so I give couples access to my personal folders. And I have all kinds of resource material and subfolders and full scripts of all different kinds of weddings. And they can search themselves through my material, or I work with them and I point out ceremonies. They'll say to me, we don't want to no mention of God. I'll go, okay, look at these ceremonies and look at these readings. And then we can start to build. Oh, we're co-officiating with one. Many couples are into Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones,
Disney.
And so far, every couple I've worked with has wimped out. I've never been Gandalf the White. I've never been Obi-Wan Kenobi. They come and say they're big fans and we want to do this and we want to do that. And I'll go, okay, that's wonderful. I'll do it. And when we start planning it, they realize that, no, we're having a wedding. This isn't a performance. We're not Saturday Night Live. We don't want to make it into whatever that is. And so I have come a millimeter from being Obi-Wan. I've been 2 millimeters from being Gandalf. But always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
You know, my own dad was very concerned about my wedding when I was planning it. That was a very short timeline we had, and it was a shotgun wedding, and it was not going to be religious. But when my dad found out one of our friends going to be the officiant, one of my friends was going to officiate our wedding, and my dad was very concerned that it was going to be like a joke, or that it was going to be a performance, or like stand-up comedy, or we were going to pull out our improv comedy chops, and that it wouldn't be the important moment that in his head he wanted it to be. And I remember having a conversation with him where it wasn't an argument, but I was like, Dad, you're not really giving me enough credit that I'm going to make some like mockery of this thing. I'm making a commitment to a man. I'm 5 months pregnant. Like, we're doing this. This is something we're taking seriously. And while we might not have a clergyman or a religious person marry us, we are still going to incorporate tenets of what a wedding ceremony is. And it's like, just trust me, it's going to be fine. And it was, but he definitely needed my assurance that it wasn't, that we weren't just like, well, we're getting married, you know, and it was going to be some like impersonation of the priest from Princess Bride or something, you know.
Marriage. Yeah. That blessed arrangement. Love.
And I think I have done that
at a number of weddings. But again, the couple requested nothing. Yeah. Nothing. And what you just described, Christy, was what couples did. They came in thinking they wanted improv or thinking they wanted Star Wars, but then when it settled down. But my goal is we want to have something spiritual, something light, funny, entertaining, a combination, so that it's not a funeral or it's not a dirge. And so my goal is to have something light and to talk about how the couple met. And then we'll have a prayer, but it's to combine everything into a moment, but it's always what the couple wants, not what I want.
Do you always work with the other? Have you ever done a wedding ceremony where you hadn't even met or talked to the other, the co-officiant?
No. We used to use FaceTime all the time, but now that Zoom is so ubiquitous, we'll end up going to a meeting room. I have a Zoom meeting room we use, or someone else. No, we always, and that's again part of my insistence that we're creating something and we don't want to go in blind and we don't want to have things unscripted. So I don't want to be surprised. Mm-hmm. Any more than the bride and the groom or the parents want to have a surprise.
You ever been up there with another officiant who just went off on some tangent, or you were
unfortunately, the only time that has happened is with a Baptist co-officiant that's gone off inappropriately. It would be inappropriate if it was a Lutheran and a Baptist. It would have been inappropriate if it was Roman Catholic, having nothing to do with the person being Jewish. Mm-hmm. It was, and that's happened on several occasions, and only, I've never had it happen with any other denomination. Everyone else has stuck to the script.
Interesting. Have you ever worked with a Wiccan priest or priestess?
There was one wedding that would have been, but the date turned out to conflict with a bar mitzvah I had. Ah. So I wasn't able to officiate. People ask me, have you ever had a wedding, or is there any you can think of that you wouldn't do? My answer is, so far, it's never happened. Like I mentioned to you, the nude wedding.
That's it.
That's it.
It has to come your way. I wanted to ask you, and this can be kind of, because it's already been an hour, but we talked to your daughter. Jenny Block was on an episode that's already come out by the time this comes out. And we were talking to her about her wedding to her wife, which is her second wedding, but her wife's first wedding. And I think her wife was 50, in her fifth, around that age when they got married. So another element was like, this is a different wedding because, you know, money is different when you're older and you're established and you have a profession and priorities are different. But she said that you officiated her wedding. And I wanted to know what that experience was like to be the father of the bride and her officiant. And this time around, she's marrying a woman. When the first wedding, she was marrying a man, and how that felt to do.
Again, that people have asked me that same question, and it was wonderful. It wasn't different. It was a privilege and an honor to be able to be the officiant and the father of the bride. And so it was a unique experience. But being any clergy will tell you that I've done funerals for my father, my sister. I married my father to my stepmother. You're in a position to do a lot of different ceremonies, and it elevates the moment because it's both personal, spiritual, religious, and it's something that most people don't have the opportunity to do. And so it's neat to be able to have that opportunity to be involved with your family at these intimate moments, at serious, at sad, and happy moments.
Did you get emotional at all in doing her ceremony in a way that you wouldn't have?
I was under strict orders not to go off script. and not to make any, yeah, the two of you are laughing because you could already imagine.
Because yeah, I would be teary.
No. It wasn't teary or emotional. It was emotional. But that was also, I was also under orders to be the father and the rabbi at the same time. But I was also told not to, because it's not the opportunity to say something about or anything other than it's a spiritual religious observance of two people coming together. And that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted it to be. And everyone reported that's what they saw.
Yeah. It could be later that you give a toast or talk, personally about your daughter. It was a beautiful wedding and a beautiful setup that they had.
Yeah. Like, I just saw a picture on your website of you and her, that dress, man. And you looked very dapper in your black. Is it a tux? Was that a tux?
Yeah. It was a tux.
You both looked just wow.
See, Chris, Michelle, so then you could project how I would look without a tux.
Exactly. He really wants to do a nude wedding, you guys. Are you all listening, everybody?
I've offered to do a wedding in my Speedo, but no one will let me.
Okay. Several times now, we've, from our listeners who are going to have their own father officiate the ceremony, the logistics of it are always something that kind of, you know, throws people for a loop. If my dad's officiating the ceremony, can he walk me down the aisle?
I walk Jenny down the aisle.
Yes. Can you just walk, for lack of a better term, walk the listeners through how logistically to do this? How does it work?
First of all, I would suggest that you get a professional wedding planner. Okay,
good
that's
job,
the first
Rabbi.
Thing you want.
Michelle just almost spit her Diet Coke all over the computer on that one.
It's actually a Spindrift, but okay. Yeah.
And if for whatever reason that's not available or the cost, whatever it is, hire a day of the wedding coordinator. Okay? If only do it yourself, if there's no other option, it's your wedding. And to spend your time worrying about who's going to walk down the aisle, where are they going to stand? Oh my God, we can't use those roses. Did you see the fish that the caterer just delivered? We can't serve that. We have to come up with something else. It's your wedding. You don't want to be involved with the logistics when there are professionals who this is what they do. And the best weddings I have are with wedding planners, because I don't do anything. I'm a PFC, private first class. If it moves, salute it. If it doesn't, paint it. I do whatever the wedding planner says. They're the professional. From the time I walk down the aisle, I'm in charge. From the time until I walk back out, I'm in charge. But other than that, the wedding planner, everything's done. Everything's coordinated. Everyone knows where to stand. Everyone knows what they're doing. It's a pleasure. The second pleasure is the day of the wedding planner, because they have an expertise and they take over the day, and they're my sergeant, my gunny. And so whatever gunny says, I do. Okay. The more difficult is when it's a friend of the bride or a family member, because they're usually not a professional and they're involved in the ceremony. So they're so split, and they're thinking of, I don't want to hurt someone's feeling, or I can't say that. When you're gunny,
I don't want to be bossy.
Yeah. Well, by nature, the gunny is bossy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into combat without my sergeant. You don't want to do anything without your wedding planner, because they direct and tell. And if you're on your own, then as Michelle mentioned, you want to find an online course, you want to start a notebook, you want to start following. And understand that you're taking on an added activity that detracts from the day. Not that you can't do it yourself, you can. However, it's your wedding. And you want to be able to put your mind in wedding. When we're all lined up, did a wedding at the, I love to say the Watergate Hotel because it's so famous. This was before it was renovated and before the incident at the Watergate. We're all lined up. And
there
I
were
have
no
my
flashlights involved? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there were no flash and no doors with duct tape over the locks to get back out again. And I go through in my head, my what we're doing, and we're all lined up. And I'll say, okay, the best man and this and that. And I'll go look at the best man and say, you have the rings. And a lot of times the best men will pat themselves in their pockets and we all laugh and then they hold them up. Well, this time the best man did that, no rings.
Uh-oh.
And he looked up and he said, I think they're up in my room. I'll go get them. Geez. I said, no, you're not. So I turned to the whole wedding party and I said, I need a man's ring and a woman's ring.
Yep, give me a ring.
Okay, and the parents, grandparents, I held my hand, we got the rings. And then we settled down and I say to everyone, we're going to do a wedding. Let us put ourselves in God's presence. We're doing this, again, I don't say that if God isn't to be mentioned, but mm-hmm. if it's okay to say God, we're here, let us put ourselves in God's presence. Let us put ourselves in wedding mode. Nothing else exists but the bride and the groom, and we're going to honor them with this wedding. So we're all going to be quiet at this moment because we're going to process in a minute or two. I then turn to the wedding planner or the day coordinator. I motion with my hand that we're quiet, we're ready, we're following her orders. Now, if you are the bride and the wedding planner, and you asked someone else to get us in, where is your mind? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? And so you want to take as much stress off yourself as you can and set everything up. And if you have a best friend that can do this, then you want to use that person. Mm-hmm. And that's just an observation that some of the more difficult weddings that were really my... Several times my wedding ended up as the day of planner, as a coordinator, because the bride and her best friend were just so fractured. And it's understandable. It's their wedding.
Yeah.
And my wife has seen enough that she was able to get people organized, to talk to different people, to calm people down, to get things settled, yeah. to act mm-hmm. as the day of wedding planner. But not everyone has someone that can step in like no. that.
Do you remember what the processional was like for Jenny's wedding when you wouldn't have entered and then it wasn't the same order?
Oh, yes. You were going to walk us through it.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Jenny. I think everyone else had walked in. Mm-hmm. Everyone had gone in and Jenny and I were the last to come in.
Right. And so
and
it
we
was
came
totally,
in together.
Right. That's what we've said before. Just Dad just walks you in, does what, you know, he would normally do. Right. And then instead of sitting down, he walks up to the ceremony stage or the altar under the chuppah, whatever it is, and proceeds to give the ceremony.
Correct. I did not walk in first and then loop back around to come in with Jenny.
You didn't walk your wife in.
No, no one.
No one
no
walked
one.
Wife
I walked
in.
No one. And no one, the wedding party walked down the aisle. And then I came in last with Jenny.
So your Got wife it. Was just seated. She just.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
And to talk to the person you're talking about, her father would have to do the same thing. Everyone is up there, just like he's the father of the bride. And no one, as an officiant, I walk in first and stand there, then everyone turns around. No one's looking at me. So mm-hmm. no one would notice that there's no officiant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be a surprise.
Well, I'd like to just take you with me to every of my weddings now, Rabbi Block, because you sound like a dream to work with.
I will do. That's why it's Rabbi on the go.
I'll find that nudist couple. Okay. I will be clothed though. I will warn you, I am not going nude.
Come on.
I won't do it.
You'll have to work that out with the couple then.
Oh, I love it. It's so funny. I think the biggest thing here, I mean, you gave so many, there were, you know, I never knew about this kind of the wedding party and originally where that came from, like why you had these people, standing. We've talked about this so many times. There's so many traditions involved in weddings that people just blindly adapt and do without really knowing where they come from. Now, not to say that somebody would choose, I mean, actually most of my weddings these days in California don't have a wedding party. It's most of my weddings don't. I don't think it's because they know where that tradition came from, but they just don't. But what I'm getting at is we've talked a lot on the podcast about so many of these wedding traditions, you know, beyond the ceremony, like where the cake comes from and, you know, the bouquet toss and all these things, like they come from some crazy sexist,
yes, they do,
you know, origins. And so that one I had not heard before, what the wedding party really, what that, you know, why there were people standing up there on either side in that way. That's fascinating to me. And the other thing is your statement of being religious is different from being observant. And I think that's so powerful because, you know, like what the scenario Christy was giving, you know, maybe there's a couple that wants to incorporate the different religious traditions, but they're not people who go to church or...
There are no wedding ceremonies described in Old or New Testament. There are no wedding ceremonies. Abraham takes a wife and has children. Isaac takes a wife and has children.
How did he take a wife? How did he become married?
There was no ceremony. There were no ceremony. And when you look at the Greek scripture, New Testament, when Jesus is at the wedding, they don't describe a wedding. He performs a miracle. It's a backdrop for a miracle. There are no wedding ceremonies. So wedding ceremonies were created by human beings who wanted to add a spirituality, who wanted to add ritual, who wanted to add an observance. They were entirely created. So when you talk about we have to have it or you can't have a wedding without, not true. Somebody invented it. There was a time when it didn't exist. And well, so it's a matter of...
You can go to a courthouse and sign a piece of paper and you're married.
Well, that's civil. Remember that we're dealing with two sets of law, civil and canon law. And civil is the license in the court. The state recognizes. You're right. But in terms of the religious ceremony, some committee, someone sat down, someone created, and people adapted, and people liked what they said, so they promoted it. But we want to get away from this idea that unless you have, you're not married. It's not true.
It does now evolve. I mean, religion,
yes,
like the Pope said, you know, we can love our gay brothers and sisters, but we cannot marry them in the Catholic Church, according to the, you know, whatever he said. And it was like, oh, that's so in how many years? Well, maybe Michelle and I will still be doing this podcast and we'll be able to say, oh, today's the day that the new Pope or somebody changed their mind. And now it is allowed or sanctioned. Correct.
But that's a perfect example of what I said earlier about my colleagues. If you don't do it, just say it. Don't say they're sinners or they're going to destroy the universe or you're giving Hitler a posthumous victory or don't say any of that. Just come out and say, according to my faith, my belief, my tradition, I do not officiate at those kinds of weddings. And give the couple my name. But I do know Rabbi Block will. And go to his website, rabbionthego.com. And he'll be glad to officiate your wedding. Just because I won't doesn't mean somebody else won't. But don't go into this long, involved, exacerbating silliness and embarrass yourself. Just as Pope Francis said, it's the teachings of the church at this point in time don't allow for this. Mm-hmm. That was it. It was dignified. He gave a dignified answer. Really nice.
Hopefully it changes, though.
It will. No, it will change. It just not yet. Anything's possible. No couple should be denied the right to be joined together because some old guy who didn't have a job sat around and made up religious laws. The couple should be joined together, just not under his auspices.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes. So you, Rabbi On The Go will travel, and that's the website, rabbionthego.com. If you're listening and are interested, contact Rabbi Block. He's a dream. He's lovely.
And well, you can also contact Michelle and Christy because they know how to get a hold of me.
That is true.
There's no way that you can't get in touch with, at least to talk with or see if we can make the arrangements, anything. And like I said, there are rabbis and clergy all over the country, and I don't have a list of names of them because I've never had a need for it, but you can see someone local if they fill your needs.
Well, often once we have a guest and we become friendly with them, when we get questions from listeners within, you know, your specialty that we can't answer, I mean, we're going to reach out to you.
Thank you. And can I put a plug in for my YouTube channel? It's called Rabbi and I. Did you go to it, Christy or Michelle?
I did. I watched a couple of them.
Okay. And we're doing two a week and posting them.
Good for you.
It's, again, just a way to talk, not about marriage per se, but to talk about religion, spirituality, and observance. And that's my latest endeavor is my YouTube channel.
I love that. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. We're so glad we met your daughter, Jenny, so then we could meet you. Next, we'll have to meet your wife. Thank you so, so much. It's been a pleasure.
Wait, aren't we going to put a plug in for Jenny's book, Be That Unicorn?
Well, we spoke about it very much on her episode, but yes, you plug your daughter's book, Dad.
Be That Unicorn.
Yes.
Thank you.
She's great. You're great. We're happy to have connected, and we're happy, really happy we finally did an episode with a rabbi and we have a connection now.
Awesome. Thank you again. Have a lovely evening.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search the Big Wedding Planning Podcast community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625 and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.